For the next few weeks, I want to focus in our worship on the issue of leadership. You might have noticed that all the readings and hymns this morning were about leading or guiding or that sort of thing. So I want us to talk about leadership. What qualities are important in a leader? How are leaders formed, trained, sustained in a community? Thoughts about how a leader does the job of leading, what they should and should not do, how leaders deal with difficult situations. And the other half of the issue of leadership, which we should also talk about, lies on the responsibilities of the led. What to do when a leader disappoints us or fails in their job? How do we hold leaders accountable? How do we support leaders? Our responsibility to hold faith, to give our trust when it's warranted, to set aside personal preferences and support a communal decision. I was thinking about leadership yesterday as I drove to church for Dorothy Geisler's memorial service. I guess I do a lot of thinking about church as I drive here. It's a half-hour drive. So I was driving here yesterday for Dorothy Geisler's memorial service, and I was listening on the car radio to a press conference being held that morning, yesterday morning, in Ventura, with the firefighters and the city leaders giving updates on that devastating fire that's still going on up in that area. From a distance, the last few days, I could barely think about those fires. I felt that I needed to protect myself by not thinking about it. I didn't need to protect myself from the actual flames. I live in downtown, so I'm not very close. But just protect myself from that story of there being this fire going on, because I've been feeling so exhausted lately from so much chaos and tragedy in the world. I felt like I just couldn't open myself up once again to yet another scene of devastation and heartache. But I had the radio on, and here were these firefighters and these city and county officials just calmly addressing the press, describing what had happened, outlining their plans, and then telling some stories of heroism from the day before when some homes were saved. Frank description of their hard work and the terrible conditions they were working in, expressions of gratitude for the good luck they had when they had it, and then calm expressions of sorrow for the homes that they couldn't save. They talked about tough decisions they had to make, like the decision of whether to evacuate the students from Pepperdine University, which would have meant moving them through dangerous conditions, or just having them stay where they were and protecting them as they sheltered in place. And I felt better after hearing that press conference as much as I did on the car radio. I felt gratitude for their leadership through these difficult times. Listening to these leaders talk, their frankness, their expertise, their courage, and their care made me feel better. Their calm, their skill. I'm sorry, I'm not having a cold or anything. I think it's just the smoke in the air. But the calm, the skill, the connection to reality, both the good parts and the terrible parts that were happening, really happening, made me feel that maybe the horrible reality of the fire wouldn't last forever, that it wouldn't overwhelm me, that it would certainly be difficult and dangerous for a time, and there would be and have been some terrible losses, but then we would get through it. That the fire would be out eventually, and people would save what they could, or they would rebuild, and we would go on. I was thinking, too, about leadership when I heard that story earlier this week about the shooting at the Borderline Bar and Grill, also up in the Thousand Oaks area. Yet another to our growing list of insensible shootings, more dead, more gun violence, more heartbreak and horror and loss. And yet here too, in that story, within that scene of pain, here was a hero, at least one, Sergeant Hellis, who ended a phone conversation with his wife so that he could answer the call to respond to the scene. I can't imagine the pain that his wife and his family must be feeling at his death. There is no rebuilding from that kind of a loss. But his actions saved other people. And his story made me remember that there is goodness in human nature just as powerful as the wretchedness in human nature that is also part of our species. We have had too much human wretchedness lately. 12 dead in Thousand Oaks, 11 dead in Pittsburgh, mail bombings, and all the other incidents of hate and violence and death that we memorialized here just last Sunday. I have no words. Sense is far away, comfort is far away, and healing is far away. But I know that it does help to think of those firefighters giving their press conference and then going back to work. It helps me to think of leaders like Sergeant Hellis answering that call, knowing the danger, and then running toward it to help. Last week in worship, we memorialized the dead, and then we encouraged each other to go out and vote. I encouraged you to have hope, to not give in to fear, and that's the right message, surely. But I know also how hard it has been in the last couple of years to hold on to hope. The daily chaos and fear-mongering and lies of the president has felt like a nonstop forest fire surrounding us. We don't know whether to run or shelter in place. Every peaceful, familiar scene in life is in constant danger now of being interrupted by some new cruel policy being announced or a message of hate appearing by tweet. Innocents around us are threatened, and we're all constantly on edge. I am heartened by this vote last week, and I hope you are too. And I know that doesn't mean the chaos is over. The political conflagration is likely about to get much worse, actually. But phew, at least this week, I feel that the voices of calm and courage have put a containment ring around the wildfire. I'm heartened by many of the leaders that were elected and also by the electorate that put them there. Maybe America isn't such a foreign country as it has seemed to me lately. And I'm heartened not just by the leaders we elected, but by the numerous state initiatives and local initiatives that were passed, tilting this country in the direction of increased voting rights, increased availability of health care, protection for trans people, and so on. Not a complete win by any means, but an encouraging result, a step forward, an affirmation that the strange times we are in really are strange, and it isn't just me feeling that way. It feels like the last 2 years have been a time of unceasing and unsettling anxiety. It feels like the stuff that I used to count on, like truth, science, tolerance, respect, have been under constant attack. It's exhausting. The rise of nationalist politics worldwide, the slow-moving catastrophe of climate change. The threats are frightening to confront directly, and they create a background noise of anxiety even when we're trying to focus on something else. Just after the election, I received in my email inbox the latest newsletter from the Unitarian Universalist Association Pacific Western Region. Not necessarily the first place I go to for comfort, but there it was. The first article was a note from the head of the region. His name is Reverend James Kubal Komodo, and his title is Pacific Western Regional Lead. And he wrote, "Dear Pacific Western Congregational Leaders, I write these words a few days before the November election, knowing you will likely read them a few days after the election. This fall, other Pacific Western Region staff members and I have noticed an increased level of anxiety in many of our congregations." Really? "People seem to be more reactive to each other, becoming very upset over small matters that in other times they might shrug off. They seem to be more reactive to decisions by congregational leaders, both religious professionals and lay leaders, with which they disagree. I can't help but think that this might have something to do with our national political climate. Social science suggests that when people don't feel they have enough control in one area of their life, such as state or national politics, they may act out in other positive or negative ways in areas of their life where they have more control, such as the congregation where they belong. Reverend Kubal Komodo admits he doesn't know how the election will turn out, but he predicts a mixed bag at best. I actually think we did a little bit better than merely mixed. So that's good. And then Reverend Kubal Komodo asks, well, what should we do next after the election? And he writes this, if the individuals we prefer are elected, our task is not to throw up our hands in joy and say, thank goodness for that, and then return to the quotidian rhythms of our everyday lives. Our task is to continue the hard, slow, onerous work of creating a more compassionate, just, and sustainable world for us all. Because elected leaders, no matter what party, rarely make courageous decisions without ordinary people continuing to pressure them to do so. Most Unitarian Universalists, that's one word I shouldn't stumble over. Most UUs don't believe in a single savior from 2,000 years ago, and we shouldn't expect any one person to save us now. Mr. Kubal Komodo's advice lays out so well just what I wanted to say about leadership in times of change. He reminds us that important goals are never achieved all at once. Whether a particular incident has advanced our goals or moved us away from them, our response should be the same. There is more work to do. As John Buren writes in our opening reading, blessed are those who know that the work of the church is the transformation of society, who have a vision of beloved community transcending the present, and who do not shrink from controversy, sacrifice, or change. Reverend Kubal Komodo advises us to look beyond surface issues and to motivate our work by staying connected to deep values and to our long-term mission goals, creating a more compassionate, just, and sustainable world for us all, in his words. And he reminds us that the work of the world is not something that leaders do for us, but work we all do together in our different roles. It's not part of our faith to expect any one person to save us. He points out one of the responsibilities of the led, which is to stay engaged with our leaders, because an engaged public voicing its wishes allows the leaders to make the bold decisions they need to make. Love will guide us. Peace has tried us. Hope inside us will lead the way. And then Reverend Kubal Komodo ends his note with this thought. He says, most of all, though, no matter what the election results are, my hope is we will be tender and patient with one another, slow to judge, quick to forgive, and reconcile. Our congregations can't help but sometimes reflect the pain of the wider world within their walls. But may they be places where that pain is held gently, where it is transformed and not just transmitted, where bitterness and despair are slowly transformed into trust, hope, courage, commitment, patience, and perseverance. This congregation has experienced a lot of pain in the last year and a half. There are a lot of reasons to feel that simply within these walls, to feel pain. The sudden resignation of your previous settled minister, Reverend Ranama, a little over a year ago, would have been enough to instigate the stresses of change on its own. But the stress was increased, given the circumstances of her decision and questions about her decision that cannot be answered because of our commitment to confidentiality required to protect the people involved. Other staff changes preceded and followed Reverend Ranama's departure, adding to the stress of change, even when some of those departures were expected and for happy reasons. Our congregation suffered through a further painful time at the beginning of this year when we were asked to deal with a member of our congregation whose behavior had become disruptive to the security of our congregation. And then in June, a water leak damaged the back half of the church office, physically unsettling some of us, to go along with the psychological unsettling that all of us have been feeling. As Reverend Kubal Komodo says, I can't help but think that this might have something to do with our national political climate. I don't mean that the president caused a water leak in our church office, although that's precisely the kind of wild theory that he would promote. But I mean that on top of all of that change within our congregation, which would be extraordinary at any time, we are also having to deal with this background noise of this extraordinary political time. No wonder we're feeling anxious. No wonder we're exhausted. And no wonder, as Reverend Kubal Komodo says, people seem to be more reactive to each other, becoming very upset over small matters that in other times they might shrug off. They seem to be more reactive to decisions by congregational leaders, both religious professionals and lay leaders, with which they disagree. I think what I found most comforting in the words of the firefighters and the other civic leaders during their press conference yesterday morning was their ability to simply describe the reality of the situation. Here's what happened. Here's what we know. Here's the danger we're still facing, and here's what we're going to do. They didn't try to comfort by pretending that there was no danger. They comforted by saying, here is exactly what the danger is. They didn't try to comfort by saying that no houses would be burned, when some obviously had. They didn't try to comfort by claiming that everything was under control when currently everything is not under control in the fire. They didn't wait until the problem was solved to talk to us. In the midst of the problem, with the fire still burning, they said, we're in a fire. It's burning. The situation is hot and dangerous and unpredictable. We've still got a long way to go, and it might even get worse before it gets better. So let's do the same. When we experience a change in life, happy or sad, small or large, we respond by moving through a cycle of feelings. And the first feeling is always loss. Then we move through doubt and discomfort, and eventually the negative feelings shift, and we start to move towards discovery, understanding, and finally integration of the new reality. I know we will get through that cycle eventually, but for now, let's acknowledge that the fire is still burning. We're suffering loss. We're doubtful about the future. The change is still hurting for some of us. And even for those who are furthest through the cycle at this point, we're probably at best still sitting in the discomfort stage. Like a helpful press conference in the midst of a still unfolding situation, let's name the reality. Let's tell the truth. We're hurting. We're stressed out. We're tired. We have experienced a loss or a series of losses. And the healthy response to loss is to feel pain. And then all the usual anxieties and fears of loss are redoubled when that loss is forced upon us instead of being freely chosen, and when the reason for the sudden change isn't really known, and in this case can't be known. We resist the change then, and because we can't stop the change from happening, we start to feel angry. We may not be afraid of some change, but that doesn't mean we have to like it. We may not be afraid of some change, but this is a lot more than some. I'd love to comfort you by excitedly describing the possibilities and promise of the new minister who will come 2 years from now, but let's leave integration into the new reality for later, because comfort too soon isn't actually very comforting. We will get around the cycle from loss to integration eventually. We'll get there together, but not today. Some of the movement through the cycle just takes time, and we have plenty of time to do that. And some of the movement through the cycle can be assisted by intentional healing work, and we will do some of that in the coming months. For now, though, let's just acknowledge and normalize the feeling of loss. painful feelings are painful. Depression is depressing. Anger is uncomfortable. Let's unashamedly make space for the painful, depressing discomfort of this time we're in. And when we're ready, the change cycle will turn. In the meantime, let's get back to work. Thank you for listening.